Well, welcome back. As I said last time, you know, today we want to look at how do you grow the members of your team so that their capacity continues to expand, and as their capacity expands, the capacity of your ministry will expand. This is a challenging thing, and it's very important. I said to you last time that I would, you know, mention to you again in further explanation the law of the lid. That is one of the leadership laws that John Maxwell described. He described how personally the law of the lid can work. He said, those closest to the leader will determine the success level of that leader. This is the greatest leadership principle I've learned in more than 30 years of leadership. Now imagine that. This is the greatest principle of somebody who's been writing, who's been consulting, who's been teaching, preaching, who's been leading a large organization, who's led large churches, growing churches. And he says, the biggest thing I've learned, the greatest single thing I've learned, is that the people I have around me are the ones that will push me to success and will allow me to continue to rise in success. Now, for us, that means glory of God, of course, but this is a powerful thing. Personally, the people around you need to be people who are growing and helping you grow. And this is true organizationally as well. Another quote from Maxwell. An organization's growth potential is directly related to its personnel potential. In other words, the organization can only go as far as your team can take it. Now, we all know there are differences in competencies. We talked about that last time about, you know, you're looking for somebody who has demonstrated competence. Well, there are some people who are more competent than another. But the reality is, the more you are carrying people at a level who are just skating by, the less successful your organization is going to be. Now, that's a horrible realization for church. I got to tell you, because in church, you know, we have this idea that we are just so nice to each other. And so we don't really demand stuff from each other. So, you know, I can't tell you the number of pastors I get to talk to who will complain about a staff person because that secretary does this, or that, you know, that youth pastor does this. And, or they don't, more often, they don't do this. That they're crying for competence, but they don't do anything about it. As a leader, you've got to ask your organization. If you're in pastoral leadership, you know, you'll often have to ask your leadership. If you're in a nonprofit organization or a Christian organization of some kind, you're going to have to ask your board for the permission to make the changes necessary to keep growing people on your team. And when they stop growing, to remove them from that team. You have to have that authority, or you have to have a process by which it's done, or you're going to constantly be behind the eight ball in the English English colloquialism. You're going to be behind in reaching your goals and seeing the vision become reality. So, what are some principles to growing your team to greater effectiveness? Principle number one is this: leaders attract leaders. And so the question you have to ask is, are you a leader? Are you growing? In other words, are you constantly looking for other levels, a greater effectiveness in your own leadership? And can others see that and experience that in you? Are you continuing to read about issues of leadership as well as theology, as well as novels, as well as biographies, as well as those kind of things? Are you growing in your capacity as an individual, but particularly in this class, are you growing in your capacity to lead? Are you going to seminars in order to learn more about leadership and conferences? Because there are people there that you know can teach you to be a better leader. Are you somebody who's obviously that kind of person? Are you somebody who's gathering with a network of leaders in order to discuss issues of leadership? Real leaders, people with leadership gifts, won't become part of your team unless you are a leader. And people on your team will not grow in their leadership capacity unless you model it. And so the first principle is simply that. Leaders attract leaders. Are you a leader? Are you growing? Now, there is a principle that I've mentioned before I just want to spend a moment on, and that is, you know, if you picture a scale of 1 to 10, and you can picture your own leadership capacity in that scale. So right now you're functioning at an 8. Let's say you're a really terrific leader. You know, you're able to help people define the vision. You're able to understand the culture, define the vision, and move people with strategic planning toward the fulfillment of that vision. You're a leader. And so you're an 8. Well, there's a real tendency among leaders to hire people who are not as quality leader as themselves. And so an 8 will generally hire a 6. And it's usually, you know, it's not consciously done, it's subconscious. That whether we feel threatened by those who are as good as us or better than us, I don't know. But it's subconscious. And so you've got to look for leaders that are your equal or better than you. Now, generally speaking, an effective leader, somebody more effective than you, won't join you in leadership. Generally speaking, that's just the truth. But you look for people who are going to be your equal in leadership. They have to acknowledge you as leader, or you have to do it in a corporate consensus way. Sometimes that's working more and more in our new generation as the millennials are entering leadership positions. But are you a leader? A second principle is this. Did you create a climate, and are you creating a climate for potential leaders? In other words, are there expectations of what they are going to do, expectations of the fact that they are going to be required to grow as part of their experience in your organization or in your church? And what I mean by that is, do they have expectations on what they are doing? Are there ways to measure their growth in their capacity to lead? That's a tough one. Are there rewards? Certainly there are rewards financially, and that's always nice. But, you know, there are a variety of other ways to reward people who are doing well, who are demonstrating growth and capacity. And one is to give them greater responsibility. Or, you know, Napoleon Bonaparte used to say, you know, as he handed out medals, that, you know, he was the only person who could get people to walk to their deaths for the sake of a little piece of tin on their chest. Are there ways you are rewarding people who are growing, that you created this climate that, yeah, you know what, if I can accomplish this, there's going to be this reward? And are you creating growth opportunities? Your own personal input into the staff on a regular basis. You know, people like John Maxwell used to lecture his staff every other week, and he would put that on tape, and he'd send it around the country for the rest of us to listen to. But that was a way he invested in his staff. Is there money for your staff to go to conferences and seminars? Do you invite leaders in? Are you creating an atmosphere, a climate, where people are expected to grow? They're expected to have their capacity expanded. Now, we began this a few years ago in the last church I served, that we, instead of doing an annual review, started doing a map, a ministry action plan. And in that ministry action plan, which three times a year, a staff person who led a department would have to come up with goals, with priorities. What are my priorities? What are those quadrant two things in Stephen Covey's language? Those things that are really important. What are those things that are important for me in this next 3 or 4 months? And how will I accomplish those? What are some of the tactics that I've used? And along with that would be, what opportunities do I expect to grasp this time? What problems do I need to solve during these 3 months? And one of those things was, what am I doing to grow in this period of time, this 3 months? What am I doing to grow? Creating an atmosphere. Now, that was a culture change for our staff, because you know, we had 22 people on staff. 17 of them were part-time at various hours. And they were hired to do particular tasks, as we've talked about before. You know, they were given job descriptions of hold this meeting, teach this class, recruit these leaders, et cetera, et cetera. And so to get them to think more of, well, what could I become? How can I grow? How can I expand my capacity? Was a different thing. And I've shown this before you, too. This is the staff values that we came up with, that, you know, we're going to take personally this ministry. We're not going to just slough it off on someone else as their responsibility. And then second value was, we continuously grow. And, you know, we evaluate regularly and are making improvements in our ministry, striving for excellence. Now, that's one way of growing. But part of that meant that they are going to continue to grow. And so as we go over those values every once in a while, we talk again, how are you growing? It's one of the things that becomes part of that ministry action plan conversation. How are you growing? How are you doing those evaluations? How are you doing your own personal evaluation, and how are you growing? And so you get people in a growing state of mind. This person is Scott Wilson. I've learned a lot from him, although I never heard him speak. I did read some of his books. I put him up there because we had a major change in this, and how we changed our culture as a staff began with a process that began with Scott Wilson. The key leader on my team and I decided that we were going to go to a conference in Dallas, Texas. So we flew down there. We stayed in a nice hotel. We walked to a church, and it was a large conference. And Scott Wilson was not one of the primary speakers that day. He was one of the ones leading a seminar. And so, you know, my key partner and I would go to different seminars so that we could, you know, hopefully gain a broader perspective on this seminar. So my partner went to hear Scott Wilson speak. And Scott described what happened in his staff. Now, Scott pastors a church that's just South Dallas area. It's now about 4,000 people in attendance on any given Sunday, weekend rather, Saturday night service as well. And he described the fact that the church had reached kind of a plateau. And it was about, you know, a decent number, but it was about 900 people. And that was it. They weren't growing beyond that, no matter what they tried. They tried, you know, changing some things in the building. They tried changing some things in worship and welcome and all that sort of stuff. They improved worship experience, they troubleshoot problems that they had, all of that good stuff, and still they're stuck there. And so he became convinced of the law of the lid. And he became convinced that the secret was growing the staff that he had, having them grow in their capacity. So he got them together and basically said to them, you know, the secret is that we've got to grow. We've all got to grow. And as we grow, the church will grow. In fact, he wrote about it in a book called Ready, Set, Grow, 3 conversations that will bring lasting growth to your church. So what were those conversations all about? Here's the first one. Modeling a life of continued learning. I'm sorry that turned out the way it did. That it's very blue. Continual learning. Modeling the life of continual learning. And what he said there, he simply set a goal for his staff to consume vast amounts of books and CDs and podcasts. This constant hunger for input became contagious. So he got his full-time staff together, and he said, okay, how many books are we going to read? This is what I recommend. Had a huge list of books that they were going to read. In addition, they were going to listen to podcasts, and they were going to listen, go to conferences and that sort of thing. And as they come back together, they would share what they were learning. And so it began to create that atmosphere of growth, a climate for growth to happen. And so that was huge. And then the second step, is mentoring other leaders around you. Second step in the growth of a church or ministry leadership team is when you begin to see others in the team impacted and equipped. And so the idea was that he had these key leaders, and he spent a year with them reading these books, listening to podcasts, sharing, talking about growth opportunities, etc. And then the idea was in year 2, they were to take all of that information and work with their teams of volunteers and maybe a staff, maybe part-time staff. That was year 2, mentoring the other leaders around you. And then in year 3, the idea was to multiply the number. It came out kind of messed up here too. But multiply the number of leaders when the people you work with begin multiplying themselves, so that those leaders become people who are having an impact on the leaders further down, the volunteers in particular. So these 3 things, these 3 conversations he had with his staff. Now, most of them caught on wonderfully, and they became part of this and were enthusiastic and energetic. And as a result, the church took a leap in the next couple of years during that 3-year process, a huge leap forward, and began to break growth barriers after that. But it took those steps in order to do it. Now, there was one person on the staff, a key person, a person who had been a partner with him for a long period of time and yet wasn't part of it. He kept you know, he'd show up and, yeah, I was reading, wasn't done during the time they were discussing a book. And no, he hadn't listened to podcasts, et cetera. And so there were some heart-to-heart discussions that went on over a period of time. And eventually, he had to fire the person. Now, you know, my partner and I were so excited by this process that we decided to do something similar with our team, recognizing that a lot of them were part-time. We got them together, the leadership team, and we just began to talk to them about the fact that, you know, the church's impact. We were on a plateau, about the same plateau they were on. And wow, if we could increase our capacity, what might happen to blow the lid off this place? That we'd have a broader and deeper impact in the lives of people in the name of Jesus. And so they bought in with a little bit of reluctance, but mostly they bought into the process. And so we were off. And we read books, we listened to podcasts. At year two, we required that each of them have a leadership team that they were investing in, people who were identified as key to their particular area of ministry. And we said, okay, go, and set them free. And I've got to say, it was both a success and it wasn't. Some people really caught on. Some people, we realized, you know, weren't ready for that depth of leadership and weren't growing in their capacity. And I'll talk about what you do about that in a moment. So, principles for growth. Leaders attract leaders. You got to create a climate for potential leaders. Number three is you ask for a commitment. In other words, you verbally describe the kind of commitment you want from them as a partner in ministry with you and ask them to commit to that. Ask them to commit themselves to growing in their capacity, talking about what the rewards of that are for the organization, but also personally, talking about you know, how they can make an impact in the name of Jesus in a positive way. Ask for a commitment. And then you've got to commit time and energy to ongoing team development. Now, if you're a leader and you don't have gifts in management or administration, this is a tough step to take. I know that describes me. I'm somebody who thinks, okay, we did that now. We've got that all down. Now we can move on to the next thing. And that's what I like to do. On my Colby personality test, I come out as a quick start and a fact finder. I've shared that with you before. But as far as a carry through, I needed some other people alongside me. Now, one of the people I have alongside me for years, for 10 years plus, was a man who was a gifted leader. And he was somebody who kind of grew up. He was in the congregation when it started. He joined the church when there were about 50 people gathering in a rented facility in town. And when they rented the facility, he's somebody who had started out as a teacher in junior high. And then he grew. And he went back for further education. And he became an administrator. And he did that in a couple of different schools. In the second school, he led them the school into a complete revision, a brand new facility, and all the stuff that goes with that, incredible leadership requirements going on in that regard. And that kind of burned him out a little bit, and so he went into business, and he was very successful in business for the next 11 years. But in the church, he had gained a reputation for character and competence. He was somebody who was looked to for wisdom, who was consulted about stuff. He was president of the elders for a couple of different terms. And he began to feel a call into ministry just before I showed up on the scene. And so he went back to get training. Couldn't go back to seminary because of his life situation at that point. But he began to get the training necessary through a program offered in our denomination. And so when I came along and began to meet him and talk with him, realized this is the kind of guy I want as a partner. And so we called him to become part of that. He became ordained later. And he was somebody who was really gifted on the management side. I was more gifted on the vision side. And what a team we were able to make, because it became his responsibility to keep on managing that stuff, you know, keep on managing that stuff and pick up behind me that and my administrative assistant, picking up the details after me. So you commit time and energy to this. Otherwise, your team will not grow. Now, John Maxwell talks about, you know, why do some people and where do some people stop growing? He says some will stop growing when they've experienced some growth. Some will stop growing when they become capable in their job and they don't feel like they have to grow anymore. Some will stop growing when they're able to reproduce themselves. They grow to that level of leadership, and so they're able to invest in other people. Some are able to grow to take them to another level, such as my partner I just described, that they'll constantly kind of go up the ladder. Some will grow to the capacity of taking others higher. That's very rare. But they're able to invest in other people so that they are experiencing growth in their capacity. And then there are a few people who grow to the point where they are able to handle any job. Now, think about the people you work with right now. You'll notice that there are people that fit these various levels, right? That they do some growth, but they stop. They're capable in the job, and that's all they do, and that's all they want. They're not going to grow into a new job. Oh, they've learned to reproduce themselves. If they get to that level, they're probably keepers. You want them around for a long time. But there are these levels that people will stop. So the idea is you've got to keep people who are in that upper level, and not just capable of the job or not just some growth, but people who are the right people. In fact, Jim Collins wrote Good to Great, as he tracked, again, in the secular world, companies that were good, but they made a leap in their life to become great companies. He said, what's the common denominators of those people? And wrote that. It's a marvelous book. But this is a quote from him. In fact, leaders of companies that go from good to great start not with where do we want to go, but with who is going to get us there. They start by getting the right people on the bus, the wrong people off the bus, and the right people in the right seats. Now, that's a simple concept, right? You're going to go somewhere. He says it's the people who are going to take you there. So even before you define your vision totally, you got to define who are the right people, who are the kind of people who represent the kind of characteristics we've been talking about in the last session and in this one. Who are they? And with them, you know, use them, help, depend on them as you're developing the vision more carefully, as you're looking at strategic planning. Lean on them. But if you need the right people on the right, on the bus in the right seats, what do you do if you don't have the right people? It's been my privilege in ministry to interact with a lot of leaders and a lot of different pastors and churches. And I've got to tell you, this is one of the complaints very often, even in growing ministries. You know, I can't tell you how many people I've listened to that said, you know what, we've got this worship leader, say, and you know what, he's been with the church 10 years, 11 years, 12 years, whatever, long time, 7 years, and we've gotten to this level. He said, but I've become convinced he's not the person that's going to take us to the next level. So what do I do? Or we got this person that, you know, we hired. We thought we had great potential, but they don't have, it turns out. They can't do what we want them to do. We're not succeeding in this particular area. What do we do? And the answer is, well, you can fire them. It's hard in a church. I've done that, and it can be very destructive, very painful. I fired the first person baptized in one of the churches I served. So caused great upheaval, but it was the right move. We needed to make significant changes in youth ministry, and we were able to do that with the next person we hired. But firing is an option. Reassigning, is there some other job that they could do at their level of competence within the organization? Well, you need a pretty big organization in order to do that. Or number three, you can help them find a preferable future. You can have some speaking the truth in love sessions with them. I think one man who joined our staff, he was an intern, so he was finishing up seminary, and he was spending time with us learning how to do the details or the skills of ministry. And we recognized some gifts in him, and so when he was done with that year of internship, we called him to become our director of education. And he did that for 3 years, and we determined that he had reached a level in that position that there wasn't anywhere for him to go from there. And so I had some discussions with him about his sense of call into ministry. Is this really what you thought you were going to do? Because I'd had conversations with him all along. He says, you know, when you talked about ministry, when you talked about, as a child, feeling that sense of calling to become a pastor, it wasn't to do this. What is your preferable future? And together we came to the conclusion that, no, he was going to withdraw his application for, we called him on a term call, which is something in our system, where we called him for 3 years, and now it was time to either confirm that call for the future or to change and to have honest conversations. One of the things I hate about the church, I love the Church of Jesus Christ, but when you're having these tough conversations, it's easy to not be truthful. And so I want to call for that. And they are tough, tough conversations. So that's getting the right people on the bus, in the right seats, is vital to your responsibility as a leader to bring that organization toward the vision that God has given you for it. Now, just one parting thought. When you're dealing with your team, there can be a confusion about whether you are pastor or whether you are boss. When do you take off the pastor hat, and when do you take the boss? Because you've hired friends. If you've hired from within, you've hired people who are friends of yours, and they see you as pastor, and they look to you for care, pastoral care. But there are sometimes you've got to put the boss hat on, and that's these times. When they are not meeting expectations, you've got to put your boss hat on. You've got to say, I can't be your, I'm your boss right now, and these are the issues. When things aren't going well in their department, that's when you have to put the boss hat on. Now, you can care for them, truthfully, you can care for them, but you can't just let things go the way they're going if they aren't going successfully and not going well. And in times of conflict, especially between people on your staff, you have to be the boss, not the pastor. And when there's a tough call to make, you're the one who's got to bite the bullet and put on the boss hat. It's easy for us as pastors, at least me, to love that pastor hat and love to be loved. But there are times you've got to put on the boss hat. So we talked about your team. Now, in the next session, we're going to talk about conflict. Because sometimes conflict will happen on your team. It's inevitable. It will certainly happen within your church. How you handle conflict will be a key element in whether you move forward as an organization or not. So we will check in with you next time.